Polling has become an important part of political life and a vital tool for major campaigns. But with so many polls coming out so quickly these days, it can be hard to make sense of them, especially when they disagree. WFDD's Emily McCord and Sean Beter are back to decode the science of polling in our series, Democracy 101.
All right, Emily, I've got some news coming in hot here. The race between Mayor McCheese and Frank Underwood is really heating up. This latest poll has Underwood up by 5 points.
But wait, the poll that just came out yesterday had McCheese winning by a landslide.
Well, yeah, and McCheese was only up by 1 point just last week. Maybe all these polls are just noise.
Well, not necessarily. Catawba College professor Michael Bitzer says it's better to think about individual polls as individual moments in time.
That's what polls tend to be more focused on, is to give a snapshot in time of the particular electorate based on some characteristics that we think may be the composition of the overall electorate come November 8th.
It's like taking a photograph of public opinion, and it's a really tough thing to do. And if you don't do it the right way, you could end up with a poll that's just dead wrong.
Right. So how exactly do you make a good poll? Well, to answer this, we went to Elon University poll director Jason Husser.
Normally when we're looking for good polls, we want fair, unbiased questions that don't seem to be leaning one way or another to one party. That's sort of the most basic level. It's also important to get a sample that's generally representative of political parties involved, as well as the racial groups in the country and other important characteristics.
So ideally, you need good questions that won't sway a person a certain way, and you need to talk to a lot of people who represent the voting public. I mean, we're talking about gender, we're talking about race, educational background, political affiliation, a whole lot of stuff.
And it's even tougher to get a good sample because people just don't answer the phones like they used to, especially millennials.
Really, really lucky now to even get 1 out of 10 to answer a phone call. That means the cost of surveys have gone up, and it's harder and harder to get the right numbers of people from each group to talk to you.
Still, good pollsters make it happen.
And good polls really are valuable to the public discourse and to the candidates themselves.
And Michael Bitzer says polls can affect how voters act, for better and worse.
If it's a close race, perhaps that might energize them to say, boy, if I can get out and if I can get a couple of my friends to vote for my candidate, they may actually win. But if it's one of those polls that shows a particular candidate with 65% of the vote and the opposition has 35% and you're supporting the opposition, why would I want to, support somebody who looks like they're going to lose?
That's a big deal, and kind of crummy to think a poll could keep voters away.
But Elon's Jason Husser has some advice here, especially in this year's tight presidential contest.
It's important for people to not think the sky is falling when their preferred candidate isn't doing well in one particular poll that came out. Minor perturbations can change that 3 or 4 points on any given day. And so don't get too hung up if one candidate is up by a point or down by a point, because it's really going to be too close to call on election day in that context.
So when you hear us reporting on a poll, remember it's just one poll, and take a look at a larger group of them for some context.
That's right. Outlets like 538 and the New York Times do a great job of aggregating individual surveys in a way that adds a lot of perspective on how the candidates are faring.
Although they're still not reporting on our made-up race between Mayor McCheese and Frank Underwood.
That's probably for the best.
For WFDD, I'm Sean Beter.
And I'm Emily McCord.